Hey, what up? This is Swamp Fiends. Today is another solo episode, another opinion-sode. Today, I just wanted to talk about a topic near and dear to my heart, which is hiring masters, multi-masters, second masters, whatever you want to call it. Now, the reason I wanted to do this sode is because I feel like in a post-COVID world, well, not post-COVID completely, but you know what I mean. People are playing the game, at least. There are a lot of new players coming in, and it seems that new players have one of two opinions, basically on who talked to them first, which is basically my area doesn't play it, so it's degenerate in terms of second masters, or my area plays it, and I don't know why you wouldn't play it, because it's in the rulebook. So as someone who plays a lot of second masters, has a lot of experience with it, I'm kind of just hoping to be the first person these people hear from on the topic, because I think it is way more nuanced than OP versus fine. So the reason I'm having this conversation is a reaction. I guess it's more like a lecture. But I'll try not to be reactive because that sort of dates everything that I talk about. I want to talk about how to play two masters well. I'm just going to say two masters for the rest of the pod because, you know, excluding your Nexus 2, your Vix, you're typically hiring one master in addition to your master. So I want to talk about how to play those well, how to build those lists, how to beat those lists. But because of the current culture of where Malifaux 3rd Edition is, my talk is sort of always going to be colored by should you play singles, that lens. So I'll try to avoid that as much as I can, but it's always going to be a cloud over what I'm going to be saying. So to start out, what are my multi-master credentials? For the entirety of 3rd edition, I've been experimenting with them, playing with them, never having any sort of resistance to playing with them. Some are bad, some are good. I will definitely tell you that my worst losses in 3rd edition were when I played a second master and got dumpstered. I have definitely played some games where I have 100% to zero table my opponent playing a second master as well. So I've seen both ends of the spectrum. The two GTs I won in 2019, one of them was playing second master in 3 out of 5 rounds, and one of them was not playing second master the whole tournament. Especially when I switched over to Explore Society, when they first came out, I played a ton of multi-master because when the faction first started, there wasn't any models to hire, so you might as well hire a second master. And I played a ton of second masters in Explorers, Outcasts, everything. But before getting into the nitty-gritty, I want to talk a bit about why I find it fun. And at the core of it, it's because I really like that Malifaux is multi-genre, that things are sort of mixed together. You know, you're fighting trolls versus Wild West banditos versus a Rat King plague summoning master versus a dojo of monks. I find that very interesting. So when it comes to creating my own list, I don't feel the need to stay within a single theme because I find multi-masters thematic in their own right. Some of my favorite stories, like my favorite story that I've read in 3rd edition is the story with Jedza and Base in the Explore Society book. And I love that story because it's just sort of like a world-building story, sort of slice of life, you know. Mikhail's hanging out with Bernadette. You know, they're just sort of around the campfire hanging out, kind of discovering, you know, learning about each other and considering their very diverse walk of lives. I just find that very interesting. There's like no combat in that story, and I love it. And a lot of the great stories that I've read or heard on the pod, the Breach That Broadcast pod, most of them have multiple masters interacting. You know, you got Parker and Zip doing a heist, something like that. I don't necessarily find the minions thematic. The minions don't really have a name. They're just dudes. I find it more thematic when two masters are doing something together. Like, what is more cinematic? When Harada and Mr. Notoro are in the same crew, you know, I don't know what they are, brothers or cousins. I think it's still a little unclear. Or when Harada's hanging out with two harpooners. You know, one of those harpooner has a shark shoulder, but I still think the first is more, there's more of a narrative in that experience. And at the end of the day, I want a cinematic experience. I think everyone does who plays a tabletop game. But the core thing and the core reason that I find Multi-Masters fun is when I activate a model, I want to be excited. I want to feel like I have a job for that model. I have a plan for that model. I have a strategy for that model. And that doesn't mean when I activate a model, I want it to kill another model. I could be excited about activating a Necropunk, hitting my lead, going over and dropping a ski marker, because that's fulfilling my win condition. As soon as I activate a model and I feel like you don't have anything to do, you know, a Lamplighter activates, it can't get over there to score breakthrough. It can't ever kill this model. I guess he'll just hit you twice with a lamppost and just pass, because that's never going to kill you, but, you know, maybe I'll throw some damage on there and it'll matter. I know it won't matter, but, you know, That is my least favorite experience when reflecting on the models that I hired in the game. So I really like hiring Second Masters because it's almost impossible to be unexcited when you activate them. They're dynamic. They shape the board every time they activate. They're collating a lot of power into one single activation, which is a good way to win Malifaux games. And I think as a rule of thumb, the more activations over the course of a game that feel pointless, the less fun the game is. You know, this is pretty obvious when you think about the games that you lost on turn three and then you had to just mess around for two turns. You're like, I know this won't ever score a point, but I'll just go over here and do something. Pass. When hiring models that do something on turn one or turn two and then do nothing, I feel bad about those models. It's basically, you could write out an algorithm in terms of how many pointless activations occurred, and that would basically equal how much fun you had across the course of the game. So that's why I find Second Masters fun. But once you add a 16-stone chunk to your 50-stone list, by the nature of that point sink, almost everything in the list needs to be streamlined, right? You have to have a very specific purpose for every model in the crew. So once I have a good two-master list that I feel happy playing, I almost feel like every activation in that list feels impactful, feels important, is exciting. That's also the big weakness of two-master crews, which we'll talk about in terms. So what is a good two-master crew? I think foundationally, not thinking about, because coloring this conversation is also going to be the exceptions, you know, the overpowered combos that have mostly been stomped out by weird, but when they create a new masters with Malifaux Burns, of course, there's new ones. Just how whenever they release any models, they're going to be OP in some weird capacity that they was unexpected. So independent of weird combos, what makes a good two-master crew is one where the roles are clearly defined and there is no role duplication across these two masters. Basically, the best two-master crews that I have found are one where one master is sort of the resource generator and the other one is the resource user, the person who's going to be using your 13s. If you have two masters in a list, both really want you to cheat every action they're doing and they even need you to cheat defensively, you're basically going to immediately burn through your cards on one master, and then the second master is going to activate and have to top deck attacks, which is a very good way to lose a game. If you activate a 16-stone model, you walk charge, you flip 2 weeks, and then you say, my turn's over. You just wasted 16 stones probably on a very important turn two, turn three, where you've already burned through all your cards. You just ate a chunk of your resources out of your list. Resources that could have been spent on 2 8-stone models, one of which went in and top deck twice, and the other one went over to score points. So I'll bring up an example of like an explorer list I've been playing like crazy. So when Jedza 2 first came out, I was really excited to play her. She's basically Leviticus and Explorers. Her bonus action is incredible. She can take 13s in your hand and turn them into deleted models, which is very, very exciting. Every time she activates, she can probably delete a model. The issue is the rest of her keyword was designed with Jedza 1 in mind, who is a support monster. So when you create a Jedza 2 crew, you basically end up going out of keyword a lot, or you just accept that most of the crew is going to be doing a very specific job for a very specific scheme, and that's why you declared Jedza 2 to begin with. But more often than not, you just end up with a crew where half of the list is just very unexciting. Like you have Lamplighters who just give out life tokens early game, and then they maybe try to go do some breakthrough or something, but they're very killable, or they just be a nuisance. And it's not fun to have like a nuisance model whose whole role is to engage a scheme runner and hope that they black joker their leap or something. That's not an exciting model to have. So basically, as soon as Jezza 2 came out, I started taking her out of her keyword and putting her as a second master in other lists. I basically tried almost every other keyword, as long as they can heal her a little bit, because she can get life tokens from her own healing. And generally, those crews are way more exciting. The best ones are ones where the masters themselves are resource generating and she can spend all the 13s. Now, resource generating doesn't mean just drawing cards. It often means whatever's on the front of the card. Anya 2 is a good example of a master that can hold Jezza 2. Anya's best features are the front of her cards. She's having you draw one less card a turn. She's getting to summon the drudges. Her attacks spike up, but not down. Basically, what I mean by that is it's a stat 5 gun that can be taken from any other keyword model on the board. So it's a low risk attack. She can be standing in the deployment zone, shoot you 3 times. She doesn't care if all 3 misses. If all 3 miss, you know, that's bad because they didn't hit, but you weren't spending your 13s on those anyway, and you did not expose yourself in any way. There's no repercussions for taking those attacks. But if they spike up, you get injured out, and then Jezza can drop her 13s on that model and delete it. So she's doing a lot without spending a single severe. An example of a model who has efficient attacks would be Ivan 2. He can support Jezza or whoever your beater master is by doing some repositioning, stuff like that. But what he's really doing is his gun actually has a gun action, which synergizes with his whole gimmicks to turn negatives into plus. So he could shoot his gun 3 times and pretty easily have a double positive on that. Now it's a 2-4-5 damage track. So typically you're not cheating those, because the way you would have to make those resource worth it is you would have to focus, you'd have to shoot, you'd have to drop 2 severes so that you're making sure you're hitting the 5 damage severe. But a way to be efficient with his attacks is just to shoot 3 times, flip 3 cards on the attack. You'll probably hit. You at least win the duel most of the time. So your opponent is cheating a card out of their hand. You're eating severes out of their hand in exchange for, you know, probably hitting weak severe out of your deck, or weak severe, something like that. Basically, you're trading up every time he takes a shot. But if he's the only model that can use your severes, 2 master AP... 2 severes out of your hand to do 5 damage, that's not a game-winning ratio. So just to provide another example of that, imagine this Ivan 2 activation I've talked about versus a Seamus activation, and both of them have a handful of weaks. Seamus goes, he could not hit his TN to teleport, take his once per activation shot, flip a week, flip an 8, flip something that your opponent can cheat over, and miss everything. Now, you could say those same cards in the same order for Ivan 2 result in a greater potential for spikes, because he's going, he's shooting 3 times. He has no TNs. He's eating through the weeks pretty easily, probably finding some severes. Maybe he hits 2 of those attacks instead of Seamus missing everything. So that's what I mean by attacks being sort of resource generating, in addition to the front of the card, drawing cards, generating soul stones, all of those things that typically that's what you mean when you think of a resource generating master. So what I mean by what makes a good 2-master list is usually one where you're not looking for on the card synergy, you're looking for synergistic roles. If there's on the card synergy, it usually gets nerfed or it is a little bit of a Rube Goldberg. The biggest losses I've had with 2-master lists are the ones where I try to build in the most synergy. You know, there are a ton of like 2-master lists that revolve around discarding all their cards, hitting all the executes, da, 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 da. Those lists seem really good on paper until they, 1, run into a competent opponent, and 2, run into the need to take interact actions. You know, all of these execute lists could be really good as long as you don't have to eventually get to the point where your second master, who's going to benefit from the rest of your list forcing them to discard their hand has to just go walk and push a strat marker and carve a path or something. The high synergy lists also are weak in that, you know, if you take out a part of those machines, they usually fall apart pretty hard. And the ones that have sort of unintended synergy should get nerfed, and I'm going to talk about those at the very end of the pod, ones I think that are little standouts at the moment. So what you're typically looking for is role synergy, right? You have a very synergistic core in your primary declared master, but you need to be able to threaten a flank. So you get a very independent master who can run a flank just by themselves. You have a resource generating master who has a lot of synergy with their keyword, but at the end of the day, they're probably just doing a lot of steps to have Mintu models swing. I'm thinking Anya too, right? She has a lot of synergy. Let's do a better example. Maybe Yoko 1 before her most recent buff. She was basically a master that existed to force you to get rid of your hand. A lot of attacks that would make you discard cards. Unseen Manipulator, you start with one less card, give you distracted. All of these things that stop you from doing things. That stop the opponent from doing things, at least in the way that they want to. But at the end of the day, had no way to exploit that. You can have a massive hand advantage, and then your opponent just flips a 12, and you can't do anything about it. And those 12s are in the deck. The 13s are in the deck. The Severes are in the deck. So Yoko 1, with a second master, can use her synergy and her gimmicks while also having a master that can spin 13s and actually get stuff done. Now, the other way you could use a second master effectively is to hire them as a model that counters an opponent's master. This role has dipped down in effectiveness since you have to declare your second master before list creation. There are still some standouts, right? You can, if you have an opponent that you know is going to have a very important replace effect, you could hire Marcus II and run up his No Place Aura and beat that model to death, and then you've killed it. Most lists can handle trading some part of their list for a 16 stone model as if they know it's coming, right? If your role is to hire Euripides, summon a bunch of ice pillars, and block up a crew that you know struggles to remove them, the opponent should know that that is coming and can hire their blow it to hell, blah, 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 blah. It's a lot harder to hire counters in an efficient way. Now you can still hire them in sort of an inefficient way, like I was talking about with the Marcus II example. Like maybe you hire Marcus II into a Lynch 2 matchup so that you can kill Huggy by, you know, engaging Lynch 2 so that he can't place Huggy, so he just dies. At the end of the day, you're still trading. You're spending 16 stones to kill a totem. Now, it may be necessary because you may need to kill Huggy. You may need to keep him honest, at least. Same for, you know, Maxine, too, is also a very good hire as a second master because she can heal herself like crazy. She can attack like crazy while also using the weaks in your hands with her deep discovery and reconfigure abilities. But if you know it's coming, you can hire your anti-demise, things like that. Keep them honest. There are some counter hires. They're a little bit more difficult to actually pull off than it seems. Like you could say, well, I hire Second Master McCabe. He brings his sword. I'm playing into Hoffman. I can just remove every armored thing there is. Well, you got to hire Luna. So now you're 19 stones. McCabe, too, doesn't have any self-movement. He's very vulnerable to control. If he gets stunned, slow, staggered, something like that, he's going to have a pretty weak activation. At the end of the day, he could be going in, killing Melissa Core in the Hoffman matchup, and then just dying. At the end, it's still pretty hard to do those counter hires. So I typically find more success if I stick to the role synergy rather than the counter hiring. At the end of the day, with Malifaux, you always want to be active. You don't want to be reactive. So as soon as you're spending 16, 19 stones reacting to their master or their henchman, you got to play that really clean for it to come out positively on your end. So you got your combo, you got your two masters, you're going into list creation. How do you flush out the rest of the list. Most lists sort of write themselves at this point, to be honest. Like, say you're hiring Second Master Pandora 2. Pretty obviously strong Second Master. She can be given Threaten via the Wicked Doll, so your opponent's crew can't really interact with her. Then she can summon Chaff. She can hand out Stun, which is one of the strongest conditions in the game. She can do a bit of damage. She's all around good annoyance model. Well, you've hired her. Well, you got to hire the Wicked Doll. There's three stones. You probably don't want just one because then she can die. You've hired another one. That's six stones. You're looking at 22. You got your master. Let's say you started with Zoraida 2. So you got to hire a few Swamp Fiends. You're basically looking at like six stones of flex or something. Now, when writing the list, the one thing you really don't want to do is lean too much into support, which is a very thing I do from time to time that really messes me up. It's like I got my two masters, and I got to lean more into their synergy. I got to hire this healing model to prevent that first model from dying and sort of my list breaking down. I got to hire this synergy model over here that hands out focus to my beater master. Hiring in that way is a good way to lose the game because you will basically put all your eggs in one basket. And then if that master dies, or if the cheap support models just get trimmed out, you can be left with just a list with two masters. And that's all that's left at the end of the game, which is a pretty common way to lose a two-master game. It's that technically you have 32 stones worth of models left on the table, and your opponent has less than that. Because your two masters are alive and they're like maybe one master and two minions are alive, but they have more interact actions. They can score all the points because it doesn't matter how many stones your master costs at the end of the game if they just have to walk and drop a scheme. So the list will probably need cheap skin runners. You don't want your masters to be running the schemes. You know, you want your Necropunks, you want your Silurids, things like that. Like I said, you'll probably be tempted to hire healing, but this is a good way to ruin the list. Like I said, having the two masters alive at the end of the game is not a win condition. Typically, in close games where I hire two masters, my beater master will probably die. Hopefully not till turn 4 or 5, and hopefully they'll kill more than 16 stones worth of stuff. But if it's a close game against an equally skilled opponent, that model probably should die. And if I lean too much into the completely table my opponent strategy, and I mean, that's like I mentioned before, that's just a highly disrespectful play that your opponent can't put it together to kill one of your masters. And then after they kill that master, you got just a healing model left kind of in your deployment. It's never going to get to a position where they can score points. You got maybe your resource high master who is very good at scoring points, but you have no way to counteract your opponent's models at that point. Basically, just don't lean too much into synergy. Like, I think one of the examples of a two-master list where I lost the hardest was I played Parker 1 and Jackdaw 1 together. You know, they share some models in the Dead Outlaws, so I can hire Dead Outlaw at cost and give Daw a little bit of synergy. He can actually push to that model. And both of them can make you discard cards like crazy, and then Daw can just execute. Hire Pride while I'm at it, why not? He can also force discards. All this synergy around you discarding your whole hand, then Daw executing you. And then as soon as it interacts with the opponent, and the opponent has to be like, well, I'm not going to kill Daw, so I'll just go over there and kill your minions. You're left kind of shrugging, because you're like, well, I can't build my execute chain. I have to now score points. I guess Daw will have to just walk and interact. Or in that specific example, Daw just got deleted, and then my entire crew did not function. So don't lean too hard into synergy is all I got to say. While I'm talking about writing lists, I want to just have a bit of an aside about when second masters are super valuable in hiring. And that is when the keyword that you want to declare is quite shallow. It's just sort of a function of the way Malifaux works. Some crews get highly synergistic keywords where almost all of the models want to be hired in specific situations. And some crews get models that are way too specialized to be considered typical hires. Or they might even just have an underpowered model. And in a lot of lists, just replacing the keywords henchman with a 16 stone model just sort of improves the crew. It's a sad sort of fact. But the Malifaux math works for some crews, but it doesn't work for all of them. And by math, I mean, you know, I see a lot of conversation about, well, why would I take this when I could take this for 2 stones more? And that's a pretty impossible equation to actually pull off, because 2 stones change the totality of the list pretty massively. It's not, why would I take this when I could take this for 2 stones more? It's, why would I take this and this and this and this when I could take this and this and this and this? You know, it almost has to be considered with the whole roster, because just 2 stones more means also 2 less stones elsewhere, right? And that is the weakness of the two master list, right? Because you're typically replacing a 10 stone model, 9 stone model, 11 stone model with a 16 stone model, knowing that you're not going to have redundancy in your typical 8-9 stone beater role. But to my initial point about that being unequal across the keywords, that's just what you have to do almost sometimes, because I don't know. Basically, the way Malifaux math works is like a 4 stone model will have some combination of 3 stone survivability and 5 stone actions, or vice versa. They have 5 stone survivability and 3 stone actions. And if you move up the line, that's usually what it is. Like, especially, you know, 7 stone models usually have 8 stone survivability and 6 stone actions. 8 stone models usually have the opposite. They usually have 9 stone actions and 7 stone survivability. There's usually a very small gap between the 7 and the 8 stone models in terms of survivability. 9 stones, same thing. They usually have the 9 stone actions, 9 stone survivability. When you get to 9, 10, 11, all of that math sort of goes out the window. It's less regulated, because as soon as you get to 10 stones, you get models that have gimmicks. So you'll have a model that has a weird gimmick, like, let's say, Killjoy, where he has his demise effect where he buries, And in exchange for getting that gimmick, he now has 3 stone defense. You know, in some ways, the math lines up. You know, it's like, okay, he's got a 9 stone attack action. He's got a 9 stone willpower, but he's got a 3 stone defense. There's usually like a weird, as soon as they get the weird gimmicks, they also get the very big weaknesses. And that is, of course, much harder to balance across the keywords. So to back to my original point, your 10 stone henchman in the keyword that you want to play may be something you're just completely unexcited to play, because you don't like the gimmick, or the gimmick is actively a downside in this matchup. You know, thinking about Killjoy again, they're printing anti-demise tech everywhere over the past 2 years. So hiring that model can just be a massive liability. You know, Titania's got some, better hires anyway, so she's not that hurting. But there are keywords across the game that really just don't have options once their gimmicky henchman or gimmicky enforcer becomes horrendous in the matchup. Now, you can hire riders, but riders also have horrendous matchup. There are sometimes some out-of-keyword beaters that are hireable, but at the end of the day, if the keyword is shallow, hiring a 16-stone like beater or support model, something like that, may just be the best option in order to improve what I'm saying is a mid-tier crew. And I think that's something that's sort of lost in the conversation when discussing singles and things like that, is typically hiring a 16-stone model in an S-tier crew is a big mistake. It's a way to focus all of your things in one model that probably does not synergize with the rest of your crew, while dropping models that were already fantastic hires. Yanlo 2 does not need a second master. His keyword is great. Shtuk does not need a second master. His keyword is great. Hoffman does not need a second master. His keyword is great. There are plenty of examples there. So often, when a 16-stone hire creates an S-tier list, it's because you are starting from a B-tier master declaration, which I think is ultimately good for the game if there are more competitive options. But we'll talk about mental health and stuff later. So how do we exploit, where was I? How do we exploit these two master crews? Basically, what in the totality of how I've been talking about what makes a good list, reverse it, and that's how you exploit these two master lists. The easiest way to do it is probably just kill the cheap models. Like I said before, instead of your two very difficult to kill enforcers, you now have a hard to kill master and a very easy to kill minion. That minion is probably hard because it has to do something, either scoring points, dropping scheme markers, or being the only condition removal, something like that. The only healing in the list, something like that. Often killing the cheap models is a good way to start in terms of dismantling a two master list. Also remember that there's probably very little redundancy in the list. One model has this role, this model has this role, and you'll be able to plan easier than most games what each model in the list is going to do. He's here to synergize with him. He's here to buff him. He's here to do the scheme running. Looking at the pool, you should be able to assess what is the biggest tool to remove from their tool belt that will win you the game. If you know it's a carve the path scheme pool, they're going to have to take a ton of interaction actions. Breakthrough is probably the most likely scheme selection. Something's going to have to get across the board, dropping scheme markers, and also not be within a certain range of enemy models. And there is a Midnight Stalker in the list. You know you got it. If you kill that Midnight Stalker, that is basically your win condition. Also, control works. Again, you're compounding resources into one model, one activation. So staggering, stunning, slowing. The working model is a good way to make the list so inefficient that you get to that point where you have two masters and they're both just doing interact actions. So like on the flip side of that, recognize that, you know, Lady Justice is a very threatening model, both in terms of schemes and killing. But if they hired Lady Justice for 17 stones, I believe she's a 16 cost, babe. She can do everything, but she can't do everything at once. So if you pick everything off around her, it doesn't matter if she has a great sword and the leap and all this stuff. If she's just going to be leaping and dropping a scheme, something like that. Another way to typically exploit these two master lists is to play what I call like Exodia lists that basically set up guaranteed kills against single models, but are horribly inefficient if your opponent has a ton of models. With Malifaux Burns, almost every faction was given some sort of hazardous terrain Exodia combo where you're dropping a pit trap or you're dropping some sort of hazardous or you're creating a hazardous aura and then you're pushing the model two times, and then you're hitting the trigger. You know, you have Mysterious Emissary dropping the Hungry Land, and then Marcus hits it for min 4 and then pushes it min 5 and then can hit Severe of like 8. Da, 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 da. Almost every faction has a version of this with Hazardous, but there are also versions with, you know, your Hamlins, your Nexus, your... all of these like synergy combo lists where you're debuffing the opponent's single model so hard that it basically cannot avoid dying. You're stacking injured on it, you know, up to 6, and then you're just hitting it with a bunch of weak attacks. Da, 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 da. Those Exodia lists can sort of set up these wombo combos. I'm doing too many metaphors. That can just guarantee if they put a 16 stone model in your face, you're just going to delete. And it's going to be a good trade for you. Unlike if you were killing an 8-stone model. So that's a good segue into when two master lists can be unfun. Now, I talked about ways that other lists can be unfun. You know, you have these uninteresting activations and two master lists are more exciting. One of the least fun ways to play Malifaux, I find, is to overextend with a master. I often have games where I'm like, okay, I guess I'll kill your master now, where my opponent has just sort of ran right in the middle of the table, and they're basically saying, deal with me or die. And it's typically a bad play because walking straight at your opponent or doing these sort of inefficient all-in plays can be a good way to lose a game. And maybe I'll have a 70% chance to kill that master by the end of turn two. But jokers happen. I could draw bad. All of these things could happen. Maybe they have a 20% chance of winning the game because I couldn't kill that master before it scraped, you know, 20 stones of my models off the board. And that's one of the least fun ways to play Malifaux. on almost all of those games, it'd be like, oh, okay, I killed your master turn two. Do you want to like surrender now? Or, you know, or vice versa. It would be like, okay, you know, I couldn't kill her. It happened. I didn't get the cards I needed. So GG. Basically it's a good way of maximizing what I talked about before, where the more turns and activations you have where you're like, okay, this doesn't matter, the least fun the game is. And those sort of all-in plays can create that sort of situation. So accordingly, two master lists will probably double the likelihood of that happening, right? If your opponent has two masters, why wouldn't they shove one in sometimes? You know, and it's still just as losing of a strategy most of the time to send your 16 stones worth of hiring into the middle of my list and I just delete it on turn two, and then you're just left with nothing to do. You know, you're still doing nothing activations, even though you still have your second master. I think this game is just much better when trading is the most typical way of playing the game. You know, I take this, you take that. I take this, you take that. I go for that scheme, you go for that one. I go for this resource, you go for that one. And then we're playing around our macro strategy, things like that. As soon as the game becomes just war, yeah, it's not fun. Just flipping cards. But on the other hand, new players often will lose games regardless of format. So we're talking about it like in a singles format because they don't understand that element of trading from a positional perspective. Like, I think the most common way for a newer player to lose to a more experienced player is they don't understand the experienced player's threat ranges and how to respond to the threat range. So I think the most common way for the newer player to lose is doing something like, well, there's a house here. I'm going to put this model on this side of the house and this model on this side of the house. And then the more experienced player goes, aha, you don't understand that I can push this model, leap here, walk here, swing twice for min three, kill that model turn one, and your model's on the other side of the house. You basically have no recourse. Okay, so on turn two, the newer player, you know, walk charges that master with their other eight stone model or something, with their eight stone beater or something. It's like, okay, well, now the master activates, kills that model. Again, the rest of your list was not prepared for me to scapple out this part of your list. So now what do? You double walk at the rest of my crew, and then you just get auto attacked and swung on twice until your whole crew is tabled. I think that's probably one of the most common ways that newer players are losing games. They're just not understanding how to accommodate for the threat ranges. So like in that situation, if the more experienced player sent that model and to kill that model turn one, they had the focus, they had the severes, they knew they could do it, but your crew is positioned to punish it, then it ends up becoming a bad play. If you know how to set up trades, then you're not an inexperienced player anymore. You know how to beat that X and one, that X and O player. I don't think I mentioned it so far, but just to reiterate. So like when I say X and one, I mean basically win a certain amount of games, lose one. If I say X and two, I mean win a certain amount of games, lose two in terms of like at a tournament performance. So two master lists can be good for newer players, for your X and twos, something like that, because they are not as easily exploitable. Because you have a 16 stone model with 16 stones worth of survivability, you have two of those, and you typically don't have a reason to be in a position where those masters cannot support each other, you're less likely to get in a situation where you're poorly positioned or misunderstood threat ranges will bite you in the butt. For example, if I'm a new player, I'm X and two, I've got my support master, I got my beater master, I got my four support models, I got my totem. That unpacks itself in a way that is pretty high skill floor, right? It's kind of obvious, you know, like support has to stay back here. The support master is going to generate resources on turn one. This master is going to go in a threatening position, things like that. And the more experienced player, maybe they can really exploit high threat ranges, get over there, kill a support model, turn one, something like that. But it's way harder for them to do those plays where you're killing their nine stone henchmen on turn one out of position of their other nine stone enforcer. And you basically set up the table from turn one by exploiting poor positioning. So that's basically the benefit for newer players in terms of playing two master lists. It's just way harder for you to get tabled. It's usually you're set up and unpacking in a way that if your opponent goes into you, you will at least understand their threat for the rest of the game. You'll understand how their crew functions. I would recommend, in the same ways that I would recommend activation control lists for newer players, because you can just pass and see what your opponent's going to do. That way you can respond to things better without the downside of your inexperience sort of ruining the game before you even get a chance to understand what your opponent was going to do. Two master lists are good for newer players because when you have 16 stones versus 5 ability that's out in the front or something like that, you're less likely to get rolled over. Doesn't mean you're not going to lose big. In fact, like I said before, you could have the biggest losses ever, but you should have at least more response or more time to respond. So that is a pretty good segue into talking about like the types of players and the types of lists that are created with two masters. Because as I mentioned before, a two master list played cautiously has a very high skill floor. Because if you're played cautious, you're walking and focusing, you have 16 stones worth of survivability, you're waiting to see what your opponent's going to do, and then you're feeling out your counter punches. It's very hard for that list to get tabled. So you have a pretty high skill floor as soon as you hire a second master. Now, that doesn't mean that second master lists are often the best lists. Most X and O players who do well with a single crew have shaved out every little bit of inefficiency. And that's usually the typical list building process. Is you're dropping things, you're trying different parts of your keyword, seeing what's efficient, seeing what's inefficient. It's like, okay, well, I brought this model because I wanted to do this, but that ended up not being that great. So I'm going to cut this model, lose two, and I'm going to replace it with this, which does the same thing, but for 2 stones cheaper. I'm going to use those 2 stones to add this upgrade here. You know, that's usually the list trimming process. It's being like getting every inefficient element out of the list and getting down to the bare bones of scoring your 8 points, right? So most X and O players who are playing list are typically playing keywords and versatiles because they're the most trimmed parts of the list. Now, like I said, the second master is very high floor, but usually pretty low ceiling, because at the end of the day, if you're hiring these 216 stone models, they can do a lot of stuff, but they can't do a lot of stuff all at once. And that's the inefficiency we're talking about here. If your second master had to kill an 8 stone model, I mean, you could just basically just do the math in retrospect. You hired 2 masters, but one of them, what it did that game is it killed an 8 stone model on turn 3, and then it killed the totem, and then it dropped a breakthrough marker and tried to engage a model or to stop a carve the path marker. You can say, okay, well, that costed me 16 stones. Well, I'll hire my 5 stone scheme runner who can drop the breakthrough marker. I'll hire this 9 stone henchman who could kill that model and be in that position. And because these are 2 models spread across the board instead of 1 model in 1 place, that scheme runner who gets there probably actually drops 2 scheme markers, and that 9 stone model who still killed that model on the same turn was able to engage that model a turn earlier. Usually that's the process of trimming your list. So basically, what does a meta look like that allows second masters versus a singles environment? Basically, as soon as you allow two master lists, you're making your X and two players perform better. If you're giving them a option that raises their floor, they will compete better with the X and 1s and X and 2s. X and 1s and X and O's, sorry. Because like we said, the X and O players usually aren't hiring these second masters because they're so inefficient. So basically, whenever you're giving a tool to a type of player, you're increasing their ability to perform. And as soon as you're giving them hiring options, you're giving them a tool. So relatively, your hungry X and 2 player who's pretty new to the game, but they played a lot of War Machine or played a lot of Guild Ball, whatever. Giving them this tool relative to the experienced players who are already winning the tournament is a big buff. The issue with that and the problem with that is then your X and 2s versus your X and 2s. So typically you'll have a type of player who's, you know, from another game, he's a new player, he's hungry, wants to win, but, you know, inexperienced. And then you'll have a different type of X and 2 player who is a person who is focused more on narrative play. They usually just play like one keyword. That's the keyword that they like. They're playing, they're at least playing that one keyword at this tournament. You're creating a larger gap between those two players because the narrative player is probably not hiring a second master on the basis of narrative alone. Usually these players like playing just in keyword. Although I would just say that, like, I've played Jedza plus base for narrative purposes because I like that story. But typically there's a bigger gap between the two because you're giving one of them a tool that the other one is probably not going to take. When you're allowing second masters, you're increasing the gap between your X and two players while closing the gap between your X and twos, your X and ones, and your X and O's. So at the end of the day, when thinking about meta health, where do you want the discrepancy to be? As an X and O player myself, someone who's trying to win the event, I would rather empower my newer, hungrier players and give them a tool that I probably won't use as much as they will in order to give them a leg up towards a closer game. Like most X and O players are using a second master as a pocket pick, right? They're like, oh no, I lost master declaration. I was hoping they declared this master, they declared this master. Well, I'll hire in my McCade 2 for anti-armor, like we talked about before. And I know it's going to be inefficient, but I need a Band-Aid because I've lost list creation. I can understand existing in an environment where your X and 2 players are upset that the newer, hungrier players are going to have these high skill floor lists that will probably do a lot better against them than their typical in-keyword list. Because like I've said before, it's easier to make bigger mistakes with an all in keyword list where you're hiring minions that can just be one activationed all the time. With the second master list, it's harder to make big mistakes. And at these lower, at the lower end of the tournament bracket, the people will be making tons of mistakes. I mean, the whole point of the game is making the least amount of mistakes. So if they're making a ton of mistakes and the second master basically makes those mistakes less bad, you're probably going to have a bigger gap there. In addition to the discrepancy between the types of players, you're going to have a larger discrepancy between the types of lists in a singles environment. Because as I mentioned before, cutting hiring to an S tier crew does very little. Cutting hiring to a B and a C or T crew with one of these mediocre at best 10 stone henchmen or something like that is a way bigger cut. And I think the difference, making the discrepancy between the masters, you know, that's a social, making the discrepancies between the players, that's sort of a social consideration, you know. Do you want to raise the floor of your hungrier players, or do you want to have your narrative players have a more even game? I think that's, it can go either way. But I think when you have it, as soon as you start playing in singles, you truncate the amount of competitive lists quite substantially. A lot of your S tier masters really are happy as soon as you can't declare a second master. Damien just came out. I'm really interested in him. I really love playing him. He's super fun with the configuration. I think he's incredibly strong. I would love to force my opponents into playing singles against me. His trigger is not, you know, irreducible, can't reduce for non-masters. And it's like, oh, well, thank you for cutting my opponent's hiring in half so that my trigger for my S tier crew, well, time will tell if it's S tier. I think it's at least, you know, like A. As soon as you make my S tier crew, A tier crew better just by restricting the format, I'm happy about that. It doesn't really change my Yanlo matchup, my Hoffman matchup, anything like that. But now I know if I get Anya 2, the game's going to be way easier. So I think at the end of the day, if you're talking about NPE, you're talking about what is healthy for my meta, playing with allowing two masters versus singles, you're going to increase the amount of lists that can be A and S tier because you're empowering masters that were like BC into a higher tier by allowing this hiring. Now you could say that that's bad. There are plenty of reasons for why that could be bad, right? You know, like a lot of people prefer a meta where they only have to worry about five or six super threats and the rest is just sort of mid stuff. I personally would prefer a meta where I can play an unexpected master in a list that I think is incredibly strong. I would prefer there be more high tier masters versus less. Same as on the player side, I would prefer that my hungrier, newer players are going to do better against me at the cost of them probably doing better against equal level players. So at the end of the day, that's why I think there are pros and cons to singles versus doubles, if you will. But I lean towards thinking doubles is just way better. Now, the most common critique of second masters is that it's too difficult to balance, which is true in one respect, right? Anytime the company prints a card, there's an increased likelihood that something is going to be overpowered. So I guess in that respect, you know, less cards, more balance. I would not say less cards, more fun. I would not say less hiring, more fun. And Weird has sort of shown themselves capable of nerfing second masters when they become too problematic. And I mean, TOs can always just say, if someone finds a loophole, that TOs can just say, no, you can't do that. That just happened. They made Weak Morning 2 and Seamus 2 able to just delete models, and TOs are like, oh, well, that was clearly unintended. Let's just not do that. But I'm pretty sure I've articulated how hiring second master can make the game more balanced, can at least close the gap between your S tier and your B tier by increasing hiring. And I think hiring's fun. Looking for combos is fun. A lot of people who played a lot of second edition were like, all the cool combos are gone in third edition. It's like, well, you also play in a singles environment. Like, there's some weird shit that's very fun in if you hire two masters. It's fun for Terra to hire a Void Wretch, Terra to summon a Void Wretch, and then Von Stuck slaps it with a rocket launcher. That's fun. It's fun that Von Schill can yell pull, throw Joss up in the air, Parker can pop him one time, and then that also lets a model on the other side of the board get its cue to, you know, drop the bomb or whatever that was part of the heist. That kind of stuff is very cool. I will say that there are some masters who I think should get retouched in terms of their leader-only capacities. I think with Malif Burns, it was pretty clear that there was not a lot of leader-onlys printed. When ultimately, I think just printing leader-onlys across the cards just improves the game in a lot of ways. Even though I like hiring second masters, if for those who are concerned about balance, if you just put a couple leader-onlys on something, then I can have fun looking for my synergistic roles while everyone else can not, you know, not break their hand-wringing about on the card synergy that's going to break the game. So I'd like to point out a couple of them while I'm here, you know, just to be fair in terms of things that I think are too strong right now. Now, I have tried a ton of two-master combos since Malif Burns come out, but I obviously have not exhaustively tried everything, not even close. I basically have not seen Guild. I have, but I've only seen Hoffman 2. Wow, now that I think about it, I played against Guild a bunch, but I've only played against Hoffman 2. So, you know, there are combos that I miss, but most of the things I've seen or tried. And I'm just going to run through the list of things I think could easily get touched and would improve the game for us people who enjoy playing doubles, enjoy playing second masters. Now, the first one is probably the most obvious one for its weirdness, which is Hoffman 2 in Mei Feng. Which is a list that's been circulating a bit. I played against it once because Command Construct says leader only, not master only. So if you hire a master into a second master's list, you can then have Sparks Command Construct it, Joss Command Construct it, so that Hoffman 2 can do his once per activation laser beam on a target three times a turn, basically dropping 12 irreducible. Now, this is obviously weird, right? Because I think it's pretty clear that when the command construct ability was printed, that leader and master are probably just kind of the same word, because there's really no reason for it to be leader only. That being said, I don't know if I find that list much more problematic than just Hoffman 2 himself, or not problematic. I don't think it plays that differently from just Hoffman 2 himself. It's definitely way different than a May 2 list because now Hoffman 2 is shitting all the damage. So while it is like a pretty weird combo, has its big weaknesses, for sure. You know, the fact that you're building your whole list around Hoffman 2 pooping out lasers is obviously a big, pretty big weakness. But I think they could probably just, I don't know how that would be cleaned up the best way. I don't know if Hoffman 2 will get nerfed. He's definitely one of the most played masters. I've played against him in every event I've gone to since Malifaux. I don't know if he's overpowered. I think he's probably on the very good side. I don't know. If he gets touched in a way, then I don't think they have to be touched command construct. But it kind of exists for Shtuk 2 too, because Shtuk 2 can make models constructs with his scheme marker things, and then I can't remember which one of the constructs, but one of the constructs has command construct, so you can like command Seamus to shoot three times in a turn. That kind of stuff is pretty weird. So in Explorers, I've tried almost every combo of Jedza 2 in a list. I've tried Maxine 2 in most masters. Ivan 1, basically anything that can actually be taken as a second master, because there's some that just like obviously can't because they have very powerful leader onlys or their totems are too strong to have to pay too much for. I would change, so just to skip to the end, Jedza 2's Chronicle should be leader only. I think that's the only feely bad thing I've had with Explorer second masters, because it synergizes in ways that is pretty weird. Like if I hire Jedza 2 as a second master into a list, there's an obvious weakness because she's the only model that can give herself life tokens. So you got to hire something to heal her to give her life tokens. If she doesn't have life tokens, she's a waste. But then, and that's a pretty cool like counterplay thing. You know, like if you don't counterplay that, if you don't do some early chip damage, then I'll be able to drop four irreducible on you every now and then. But the Chronicle is the X weirdness. Because that's whenever a model within six heals, it gains a shield. So it has obvious synergy with things like Maxine 2. So every time Maxine 2 cheats a tome, she's healing one and then she's gaining a shield from Jedza 2's Chronicle. Can lead to some really bad feels moments where opponent goes in, they swing on you, they're failing the duel, they just decide to miss it. And then you're like, okay, well, I'll cheat this. I'll even discard this one of mass to use your tomes. So I cheated a tome. I heal one. I gain a shield. So next time you swing, I'm effectively armor 2. Maybe armor 4 if I have another tome in hand, you know, kind of thing. And the same with the kids, because if you hire Jedza 2 and the kids, and you go and you shoot one of the next two kids and you miss, or let's say you don't shoot. You go and you melee one of the Nexus 2 kids. You miss the attack because of a joker, right? Well, now the kid declares their defense trigger, gives you a parasite, you take a point of damage, I heal a point of damage, and then I gain a shield from Jedza 2. So next time you swing, it's the same thing, except for I've healed 2 off of you missing, and now you have a parasite, so I can reduce your dual total by 2. It's a pretty, like, feels bad-y thing. So Jedza 2, Chronicle, leader only. An outcast, Terra 2, is pretty obvious. A great second master. She's a fast spot. She can give models fast. She can give them reposition with the rewind, and she can generate pass tokens, all of which are very good in every list. You know, if you run into a scheme pool where pass tokens are great and reposition is great, you're golden. You know, you could just hire her into a Von Schill 2 list. So now I generate 2 pass tokens with her. I put rewind on Hannah and Schill. I get the last 2 activations after you're completely gone. Both of them leap with their rocket boots. They go and they punch you, and then they just rewind back to start. You can't even return fire next turn because I'm back in my deployment zone. Stuff like that. It's pretty lame. Same with Leviticus. She can basically generate the pass tokens that he wants while also putting a rewind token on wherever he is. So if his demise ever triggers and he's, you know, usually way out of position because the Wastes have to play super safe, he can then just rewind back to where he is and then go back to swinging. But it is Terra 2. She's getting changed in some way. No one likes playing against her. Everyone hates her. So she's going to get nerfed in some way. She probably doesn't need a leader nerf. Maybe she does, but everyone just kind of hates her right now. So I don't think she'll survive the next errata. Karai 2 is probably the biggest standout in Rezzers. Now, this is the one that I haven't seen or played against, but I think it's pretty obvious that she needs a leader only because she can just summon Ikirio so easily and gives Ikirio double triggers with her ability and then can also summon beyond that. And then when you add on the fact that the Gwisen are versatile, so if you're hiring in her keyword in a crew, you're not even paying a cost and the Gwisen are insane. She's just too much. It's like you're paying 16, but then she summons that 8-stone super beater. So it's like, okay, well, I kind of just paid 8 for my master. I think you could pretty easily give her a leader only on one of her summons and change her power, even though she may get a power adjustment as well. I'm not sure. Relatedly, in Neverborn, you would think that Pandora 2 and Dreamer 2 should get the obvious leader onlys because Dreamer 2 can also summon Chompy. But I've tried them enough where I think they're kind of so inefficient in that I think it kind of makes up for it. Now, Pandora 2 is very annoying. You know, say you hire Pandora 2 and then they got to hire 2 Wicked Dolls to keep her where you can't interact with her for the rest of the game. That's very annoying, but I don't know exactly how to express this. It's like not a win condition. Like her summoning summons and doing all of her stunned annoyance can make your day awful. But usually if you're playing carefully and taking what you can from whatever part of the crew you can take, it doesn't end up being that strong. It is very annoying. Same for Dreamer 2. Like you would think as soon as you hire Dreamer 2, you basically get another hand because he can, I mean, there's obvious synergy between, I'm just talking about Pandora 2 and Dreamer 2 because, you know, Dreamer 2 can give a model slow to basically get another hand with his trigger on his attack action. And then Pandora can convert it to fast. And then Dreamer can summon Chompy at some point. But the crew is... Dreamer 2 as a Sega Master is so weak early game that it almost makes up for it. I don't think there's anything in Arcanist other than the Hoffman 2 stuff. Bayou, nothing has stood out yet. There may be something with like... I don't know. Like I think Matu will become a common second master hire because of her ability to counter certain elements, but I don't think it'll ever be a staple like thing I do all the time. In Thunders, there's some obvious stuff with like Yoko and Misaki and putting McCabe into any list, but none of that stuff has really broken my brain. It all kind of feels the same as if you declared one or other of the masters and didn't hire the other. So that's about it. That's my love letter. That's my info dump about second masters. I hope it was informative and clear, and I hope if you were on the fence about whether you should allow second masters play singles, whatever, that I swayed you a little bit in terms of what I think is actually a healthier and more fun meta if you play with second masters allowed. The last little bit of reaction I'll do is just whatever you do, don't be the guy who is like actively shaming people for playing in a format that they disagree with, you know, being the person who's like, well, we don't actually play with second masters because we care about meta health and, you know, we're actually, you know, more gentlemanly gamers, because that has no ceiling. There's no stopping point for that. You know, I could say the same thing anytime I get any whiff of power. I wouldn't allow that in my gentlemanly, you know, gaming club. So just don't be that guy.
What are you doing in my swamp?